This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome back to our front porch, y'all. This is another attempt for us to launch an episode of Off Leo's Rocker, the podcast of TomahawkTake.com. I'm Alan Carpenter, and beside me is senior writer Fred Owens.
Hi, I'm here.
Okay, good. You know, Fred, it's getting hotter out here on the porch, but I guess it happens in the summer, especially where you live. But the question I've got is, when are these Braves going to actually get hot themselves?
Well, I'll tell you what. Odd that you should ask me that, because tonight's a good day for them to do that. 21 years ago today, they had their first winning streak of the 2001 season, and they went on to have a 9-3 12-game road trip and won the division by two games over the team that was they were trailing by 8 at the time. So, yeah, tonight's a great time to start that. All you need to do is keep hitting. Is that possible?
Well, it should be in Denver, but certainly they got their hitting shoes on last night. Normally we do this on a Thursday, but we decided to watch the game last night, and it was a good thing because they broke out the bats in a big way and just kept going, just hoping that happens again tonight. Now, the real trick, though, is that it's not just the Braves having to win here. It's also the Mets having to lose, and it looks like, at least the way the schedule is, that the Braves may be primed to gain some ground, because the Mets are playing all first and second place teams from now until the 29th of June. They got the Dodgers, they got the Brewers, they've got the Padres, all kinds of teams that are really doing very well. And if the Mets at least come back down to earth a little bit under 500, and there should be ways for the Braves to make some hay, because the Braves are playing a lot of teams that they should beat. The Arizona Diamondbacks, they didn't do so hot against those guys, but they got off to a good start against the Rockies, and now, like I say, maybe a chance for a three-game winning streak for the first time this year.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. I'm a little concerned about the Ozzie's not playing tonight. He's not in the lineup, and it's probably a good thing, because he's not doing his. I mean, he runs into a few of them and he gets a few hits because he's fast, but he's not really the Ozzie he was in 2019 or any of that time. Because and it's just odd that he's like that. I mean, I know he's always been sort of a first ball fastball go get him hitter, but. Boy, he's not been that good this year. I guess that's probably part of the reason he's sitting tonight. That's the only other reason I can think for Arcia playing, unless Ozzie just pulled up a little lame. I know that I didn't see anything last night, so maybe it's just Snip trying to do that. What do you think?
I mean, he does like to give everybody a day off every now and then, and certainly he hasn't had one in a while, and it'd be a good time to do that. RC has certainly shown that when he gets off the bench and gets a chance that he can hit, and, you know, they certainly need that in the lineup for continuity. But I had done a little bit of research earlier, and I'm just checking again now to see how the fastball rate is on Ozzie, and it looks like teams are just not throwing him fastballs very often, and that's about the only kind of pitch he can really hit. In 2017, he got, well, that was his first year, 56% fastballs. That dropped to 49.5% in 2018, 48% in 2019, 44% in 2020, back up again to 47.5% last year when he was hitting so well. But this year, 41%, 40.9 to be precise. He's getting a lot less fastballs to hit, and my belief is that, and from what I've seen on brooksbaseball.net, is that he's also getting higher fastballs as well. He's not getting cookies down the middle. So my expectation is that that's what teams have done to combat him, and it's working. So since he hasn't made the adjustment yet, he's not going to get any more.
Yeah, you know, StatCast has a slightly different sound. They show him at 50.8%, but
really?
That's 50% of all pitches are fastballs, but as some kind of fastball, okay? But the four seam rate is 31.5, okay? Mm-hmm. So what he's hitting really, let me see if I can get down around here. he's hitting sinkers, I think, mostly. And the whole thing about this is it's just his expected batting average on fastballs is .221. So the hits he has got on fastballs have been those he's beat out on the infield that he probably shouldn't have beat out. Any kind of breaking ball sends him into a tizzy, and he's got a .083 batting average against cut fastballs, hitting .021 against. I mean, he's hitting .213 against off-speed pitches. He's just not hitting much except the ones that happen to fall to the end of his bat. And that, as you say, that's a really bad thing for him.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm looking now at the pitch values table in Fangraphs about this, and the only pitch type he's got in really good positive territory is the fastball, and yep. Even so, it's half of what it was last year. He was at a 14.1, whatever that number really means, 14.1 on the positive ledger against fastballs last year, 7.6 this year. Again, that's about location as well as anything else, because he's just not hitting those fastballs anymore. Everything else is negative. Every other pitch type is negative, with one exception. That is the slider, where he's 0.5. So
yeah, I'm sorry. As a team, the Braves hit fastballs. Now that's it. Okay, they're hitting 204 against breaking pitches, and 231 against off speed pitches, and 280 against fastballs. That tells you where the Braves are. And some of these guys, I mean, I don't understand why anybody throws them a fastball. I really don't. It's really confusing. Some of the fastballs, the ones that aren't the ones that are down out of the zone or down in the bottom of the zone, are getting hit. But it's just, you know, on a four seam fastball, Adam Duvall's hitting 170. In fact, on a four seam fastball, only Ozzie, Arcia, and Willie the Kid are hitting over 100 on that alone. Ozuna's hitting 280 on it, but it has to be a four-seamer, okay? Those four-seam fastballs, they're murdering those. Everybody else is in the 100s and low 200s. It's just that's all they're doing this year is killing fastballs, breaking pitches, and off-speed, not so much.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that may have been significant part of the reason why everybody was going after first pitches last night. Pitchers obviously try and tend to get ahead of the count, and they like first pitch fastballs. And if you throw one against the Braves, they're going to go after it and ambush it. And that's happened a lot last night for sure. And I'll be curious to see what kind of adjustment that the Rockies make tonight to that. So still, this team has got to make some adjustments, and they're not going to get fastballs all the time, and good pitchers will throw something with a bend in it, and that's been their bugaboo the entire year, it seems. So, yeah, I think we're in agreement here. These guys need to be doing something other than just trying to ambush fastballs, and if they don't do that, they're not going to have good nights.
Yeah, and somebody was screaming about why isn't Willie Contreras in the lineup, and I don't know why he's not in. I haven't seen anything about him coming up or anything. I heard something on the broadcast last night about he might need an extra day to recover at altitude or something, but he's only hitting .056 against breaking pitches. So why would you throw Willie the Kid anything that hasn't got a wrinkle in it? I just don't understand why you would do that. He's hitting pretty well everything else, you know, off speed pitches. He's killing them. He's hitting 400 against off speed pitches, and hitting 500 against cut fastballs. He's killing everything else. So, you know, if you throw a little wrinkle in it, you're going to get him. Oddly enough, Riley is having trouble with some of the fastballs as well because of where the location is. Anything down in the zone, he's just not getting to, and he's missing balls over the heart of the plate. So, yeah. Maybe this will change in Colorado. Maybe they'll get their mojo back. Colorado's usually good for that.
Yeah, well, if nothing else, balls don't break as far into Colorado as anywhere else. So things are going to at least look a little straighter overall. So they got Chad Kuhl against them tonight. He has a 3.56 ERA. That sounds like a challenge to them. So we're just going to see how that goes. But other than that, I've been – kind of wondering if the Braves can get back into the NL East. Right now, if the playoffs started today, they aren't in it. They've got to catch the Giants. I think they're the last team in the wild card race right now. And it's like four games that were behind those guys. And 11 looks kind of daunting, to be honest. Yes, I'm talking on both sides of my mouth here because I said, yes, the Mets are going to have a June that is going to be challenging for them while the Braves have a schedule that looks easy. But at the end of June, even taking that into consideration, I would be surprised if the Braves were any closer than 5 or 6 games. So what do they do to get back in this race really is the question here, other than just hitting better.
Well, I mean, the bullpen that was supposed to be the best in the league on paper just hasn't been that way. I mean, Kenley's been hittable. Will Smith has reverted to the first part of last year's Will Smith. In other words, a guy who can't be trusted. Jackson Stevens has been the surprise in the bullpen. I know he lost that game the other night, but that was a horrible place to throw him into a game. He was on a hiding to nothing out there. And the throw to home plate by Duvall didn't do him any favors. Not that the Braves would have come back and won the game, but throwing him in at the deep end, I mean, I don't know who else they were going to throw out there at that point. They certainly were going to throw Darren Old Day out there. they had already used everybody that was dependable in the pen or even semi-dependable in the pen. What hurts is Matzik not pitching like Matzik, Smith not pitching like postseason Smith, and Minter being up and down. I mean, even if one of those guys was pitching well and Kenley was having a bad night, you say, okay, let's just give Kenley a night off and put one of these guys in place. But they're not doing it. And I think that the starters over the last few games anyway have done their job. They're getting into the fifth and sixth innings of the game. They're keeping the games close. They're not giving up stupid runs. And even when Anderson gets a little behind, he seems to bow his neck and get back in it. Strider's going to give you 5 or 6 innings. I think the rotation's going to smooth itself out. I just don't know what you're going to do. At the start of the year, I said something on radio like, if you're not ahead of us in game, at the end of the fifth inning, just go home. But it hadn't worked out like yet.
No, it hasn't. You mentioned one other thing in the middle of that, and I want to go back to the second Arizona game, the one they lost in extra innings and had no business losing, frankly, because it wasn't just, you know, the pitching, I don't think, but it was also the defense doing stupid things. You mentioned Duvall throwing home and overshooting a cutoff man when he could have kept a runner out of scoring position. He's not the only guy who did that. Acuna also airmailed a ball home that he should not have been throwing because he thought somehow he could get a runner out from third base trying to score on sacrifice fly. But what he did in the process of doing that was allowed another runner to move up to second base who ended up proving to be the winning run. That wasn't the only problem, too. We also had a couple of defensive lapses during the game that cost the Braves some runs as well. So we've had some odd games, not like Philadelphia has, but certainly we've got some games where the defense has sort of imploded or panicked, or I don't know what you want to say about it. We had about 8 unearned runs scored in a San Diego series earlier, and that Arizona game was lost by unearned runs as well. So the team needs to tighten up on defense, and I sure hope that when Snit made his displeasure known in the media after that game, that he also brought that into the clubhouse and said, you guys need to tighten it up. You need to throw to cutoff men, do the fundamentals, stop getting thrown out at third base, and things like that. We may have seen evidence of that last night. Yeah, they had a big lead, but Michael Harris, for instance, did not try to extend a double into a triple. I think he would have made it easily, but he held up. I think Acuna could have had a triple in one case as well. So they may be heeding that advice, I'm hoping, that came from Snit to say, get your house in order on the base running, get your house in order on the defense, and then we'll worry about the pitching later.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of it, because when he came out and he said we threw pitch, the pitchers had to throw too many pitches they didn't need to throw. That was purely a shot at the defense. Yes. And I think that, you know, they want you want to know why Contreras isn't playing left field? He's a catcher, folks. Okay, I'm sorry. I know he's an athletic catcher. I know he's fast for a catcher, but he's a catcher. His whole total time in left field is probably less than Max Fried has left field. I mean, he's got, you know, I love Willie the kid. He's a great guy, but I'm not going to stick him out there at Colorado in the biggest left field in the game and hope he can do it. My gripe about left field is that you're playing Ozuna out there, which is about the same thing. So Duvall needs to play left field. Ozuna needs to DH, and we need to work around that somehow. And this whole thing, what bothers me about him is that he's not catching tonight. And after after Darno had that night last night, I expected Contreras behind the plate tonight. And I don't have him, and that sort of is interesting to me. That's another side of this. The outfield with Acuna and Money Mike in the middle and Duvall on the left is good. Okay, nothing's going to go wrong out there, except, well, Duvall had a rush of blood to the head, but mostly he's smarter than that. But they're going to have to tighten their game up all the way around, because this team is not hitting like it did last year. It's not feeling like it did last year, and its bullpen is not as good as it was last year. Everybody throws rocks at Luke Jackson, but there have been a lot of times I wished I had Luke Jackson out there.
Yeah, last year he was really nails in a lot of cases, and we speak now of Spencer Strider almost the way we were talking about Luke Jackson last year. So he is definitely being missed at this point, and certainly Matzik is being missed as well. I hope he can get back in the saddle pretty quickly. At least tonight in the Friday night game, we are in fact seeing the outfield that you wanted to see. Duvall, Harris, and Acuna across the acreage. And I say that without a tongue in cheek, because in Colorado, you basically do measure the outfield in acres. And it's good to have some guys who can cover that. I've been very happy with what I've seen from Michael so far. Yeah, Ozuna got lucky last night. Let's be honest about it. He was said to have trapped a ball. It didn't really trap. It bounced and managed to hit his glove as he was sliding there. He was at serious risk of that ball going behind him. And I think the replay showed he was basically closing his eyes and praying when the slide was happening, and somehow the ball found his glove. But sooner or later, those kind of plays are going to bite us. And if we can keep him on the bench as a DH, I think that's the best.
I read something that early this week when MLBTR was publishing a list of contracts that players that might get released because they aren't playing up to the contract, and one of them on that list was Adam Duvall. Yeah. Now, I don't know. Duvall's defense keeps him on the team because, you know, they're wanting to bring up Waters. I like Waters. I think Waters' defense is good, but he's been injury prone this year, and he's never played in the majors. And I think this might be a little big for him right now. So I'm not sure I would do that. But if I had a chance to swap him out for somebody who could help and bring in somebody like Ben Gamble or somebody like that who can actually catch the ball in the outfield as well as him and may hit a little bit too, I'd do that. I just don't know that – I don't know who that person is that would take him. And I don't think the Braves are going to just designate him or try to trade him mid-year unless they get an opportunity to make a swap for that, because, first of all, we don't know how much he's going to make yet. I don't think his arbitration's come through. I may have missed it. But, he's certainly not going to earn his arbitration money this year. And he's with the bat, and with the glove. I mean, there are fourth outfielders out there you can get for a lot less. I just wish that they had just let him walk last year like they did 2 years ago and brought back somebody else. I know that that's easier said than done in retrospect, and maybe things didn't look that way at the time. But I read that and I went, I don't think so. What do you think?
Well, when you got a guy who I'm not going to apologize for this exactly, but I am going to come up with maybe an explanation. And when you got a guy who had 38 home runs in a year, you got to be thinking, wow, that's really good production and it's really good value for the price point he's at. But even if he had dropped off some, you've got to figure that he'd still be worth it. But we didn't figure he's going to drop all this far. And that's the problem, is that between the baseball not going as far and Adam sort of getting back to what he was when we first had him up in the majors a couple of years ago and needed to send him back to AAA for some seasoning or something, then, yeah, I don't know that the Braves anticipated this kind of a fall on him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Because, I mean, if he was even half as effective, that's still 20 homers, and that's still pretty good for what he's doing, especially with Gold Glove level kind of defense. The fact that he's had to spell things in center field has sort of been a bonus, and happily that's over now, but it just means that the outfield defense is what we want it to be. Now we just got to get his bat going, and I don't know what it's going to take to do that, because right now it seems like pitchers have figured him out, and like Ozzy and like others, he hasn't adjusted. And
yeah.
I don't know what it's going to take to get these guys to change their mindset and you know, spit on sliders and look for things that are actually in the zone that they can hit.
Yeah, the only thing he's hitting right now is the lower right hand, a lower quadrant in the opposite batter's box. He's hitting down off the plate and left-handed side of the bat, left-hand batter's side of the box. That's where he's getting all of his juice from. And he's got a 12.5% pop-up rate. 12.5% pop-up rate, and he's under 41% of his pitches. That is not good. And I'm not sure that whether he's not seeing the ball, I'm not sure. And he's over 21% because he's hitting more. He's got 15% topped and under 41%. So that doesn't leave a lot in the middle for him to do that. 41% undercut is why you can call him Pop Duval this year, because he's popping up all over the place. And when he doesn't pop up, when he gets it to the outfield, it's so high, he's so far under it that it's just a lazy fly ball, a can of corn in the outfield. That's why I'm not sure whether his bat slowed down, whether he's not seeing it right. I looked back over his home runs, and I looked back at his launch angles from 2016, which was his best year, really, 2016, 2017. And his launch angle started going up in 2017. It went up in 18 and 19. It was about the same. It went up last year just a little bit. This year, it went through the roof. And he's well under the ball this year, which is not a good way to get balls over the fence. And that's why he's not hitting those 20 or 30 home runs. And again, somebody's got to have pointed that out to him, because they have all that data in front of him, but he's not adjusting to it. And that is a problem.
Yeah. And as pitchers seem to be elevating the fastballs more, that would account for it as well if he can't follow that pitch up. But even those that he is hitting, you said low outside corner, he's probably trying to pull them, right? And he can't pull that ball, and certainly can't pull it out of the park. He's got to change his approach and see if he can become maybe a little less of a pull hitter as well, and see if that helps out. But that's not his style. That has never been his style. And I don't know that there's anything he can do about it other than just wait out the pitchers and look for real strikes that he can handle.
Well, he's always been a pull monster. He's been a 42, 40. What from? He's at 45 for 45.5% pull and 35% up the middle this year, and that's pretty much been Duval his career. The problem that he's having is, and when he hit the ball the opposite field, it used to go out, because he was getting a nice lift on it, but now he's underneath that ball and it's a pop up to behind first base. I wish he would get it straight. Maybe they need to reboot him. And I don't know, but whatever the case is, he's swinging under the pitch. It's going high. He's got a 7% barrel rate, which is not the worst on the team. That actually belongs to Ozuna at 4.5%. And Michael Harris has got 6%, but he's only got a handful of at-bats. Everybody else is in double digits, and there's a problem there. He's not hitting the sweet part of the bat. You can tell that by that's going under the bat, and he's getting 21% burner rate, so he's killing a lot of worms. And then he's got that 12% pop-up rate. All that indicates is all that's why he's not hitting his weight.
Well, let me move to another topic real quick here. You'll probably bristle at the source here. It's Jim Bowden on MLB radio this morning, but he was suggesting that the Braves need another pitcher, they need another rotation guy for the long haul, and suggesting that all the guys that they've used in the fifth spot have a combined ERA of something like 6 or 7, and he's right. Bryce Elder has taken a turn. Tucker Davidson's taken a turn. Spencer Strider now is up in the barrel. But my question is, do the Braves look for a pitcher at the trade deadline, or do they just try and see if they can continue to solve this from internal sources, whether it's those guys or Mike Soroka, if he can come back? You can't really count on him to come back, but you may at least know what he can and can't do by the trade deadline. We've still got 2 months before that happens, but what do you think it's looking like so far?
Well, the trade market is Frankie Montas, which we're not going to pick up, and then you're looking at guys who are fourth and fifth starters. Drew Smyles, Kyle Hendricks, Quintana is out there with a 2.10 ERA this year. Yeah. And the reason Quintana's having a 2.10 ERA year is the ball's not flying as far, and that's good. I mean, everybody's buying that. So if you do that, I just don't know that Anthopoulos is going to throw money and prospects at that if we're double digits or that far back at as we get close to the deadline. This team has got to get within spitting distance of the Mets, and at least into the postseason picture by the end of July, or he's going to run with what he's got, because there's nothing out there that's going to make a significant difference to us now that we've got Mikey in center field, unless he can actually replace Duvall, or maybe he replaces Heredia with a bat and uses Duvall as the fourth outfielder. I got no problem with that. It's just, I just don't see who that guy is. I mean, Laureano's not hitting yet, and the pitchers on the market, there ain't much. So I don't know who Bowden suggested. Did he make any suggestions?
In terms of the pitchers, he mentioned the guys that you mentioned, also from Cincinnati. Shoot, now his name escapes
Tyler
me.
Bailey?
No, not that one.
Luis Castillo. We can't afford Castillo.
I didn't figure that much either.
And him or Montas, both those guys are going to cost more than we can give them.
Likely, because I think if Oakland was ready to sell him, they would have already sold him at the preseason point. So I think that somebody's going to pay the price, but I don't know that the Braves have got the price that they'd want to do that. So I'm kind of the opinion that we're going to have to ride it out and see what Mike Soroka can do, see what some of these other guys can do, and just kind of let that go. You mentioned the outfield, though, and there is one other name that we haven't talked about that might be worth taking a flyer on at the right price, and that's Michael Conforto, because he's still sitting out there at home with his feet kicked up and hasn't had
surgery on his shoulder, didn't he?
I don't know what the state of his shoulder really was, and they haven't been very forthcoming from Scott Boras's camp on what he really did, but my suspicion is that if he can hit at all, he ought to be able to take something cheap to be able to prove his worth for next year.
Yeah, and, last I read, he was having surgery on that, and Boris was saying, "Well, you know," and then, but I thought Conforto had said that he was going to have surgery and to get that shoulder fixed because he can't afford next year without a good shoulder. Because, you know, if he's over the winter, he's going to get a pillow contract somewhere. Maybe Atlanta gives him a pillow over the winter. He doesn't get that shoulder surgery, nobody's going to give him a contract because his arm might fall off in the outfield. I mean, he can't do that.
Yeah, and what we've already found out with things like Ozuna is that if you have shoulder trouble as an outfielder, you might have some trouble hitting, getting back to hitting well, and maybe the throwing too. But, you know, that he's going to have to prove himself then. I didn't realize that we were looking at a surgery-level event here, but apparently that's the if that's the case, then he's not going to get anything from anybody. So, yeah, I suspect that we've got the center fielder we're going to get. The only question then is, do you want to replace Heredia? Do you want to replace Duvall or at least put him on the bench or something? I don't know that that's going to be in a scenario that they're going to go after necessarily. So you may be right in that we may be doing a little more standing path than we've done before. Maybe another reliever if things continue to go downhill a little bit in the bullpen. But right now it doesn't look like to me that there's an all-in situation here.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, what we've got Preston Tucker at Gwinnett. And quite frankly, what's out there is probably not much better than Tuck. And I mean, you know, he's really not a great defender, but at the same point, where the guys who may be available, Ben Gamel might be available at Pittsburgh. He's been hitting the ball, plays good defense, kind of a fourth outfielder guy. He's available. You might pull Lee and Happ away from the Braves or Bree from the Cubs, rather. Because as Hap's been playing good defense this year, and he's versatile, he can play all three positions. And in a pinch, he can play a little infield as well. But I don't know, you know, it depends on what you're going to give up for these guys. In other words, these guys are not going to be pieces in your build. So, and they may not be enough a difference maker on the team. So what are you willing to give up for a guy who's, last year we gave up Panda for Rosario, and we've got Eddie coming back. So, you know, we hope. And so if we can give up a Panda or an Alex Jackson kind of guy, and get somebody back who, the Anthopoulos magic works on, I'm for that. But I'm not going to go out empty the cupboard for a guy who is going to walk at the end of the year and who may not do any good.
So basically, we're looking at a trade deadline acquisition of Mike Soroka and Eddie Rosario, and that wouldn't be terrible if they both could perform up to their levels. I don't know that we're going to expect that from either one of them necessarily, but it's probably about as good as anything that we can come up with otherwise. So
I don't expect Soroka to do more than four or five innings a game at maximum when he comes back, because he hadn't pitched in 2 years. I mean, really. And you can't just, no matter how much long toss and mound work he's going to do, he's going to come up and be a two or three inning guy. You know, I love Soroka. If he was healthy and he was pitching well, that's fine. But we've got to put reasonable expectations on this guy, and he hasn't pitched for 2 years. That's the bottom line in this. So you can't throw him out there and say, go give me seven, Mike, because he'll try, and then his arm will fall off. And we can't do that.
So
same as what happened to Matzik last year. We pitched him and pitched him and pitched him until the adrenaline on the postseason got out there, and he just blew those guys away and scared them to death. And now his shoulder's sore.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate part there. But so on the offensive side, it's like, okay, throw Rosario out there, put Duvall on the bench, got Contreras on the bench and occasionally catching to give us some punch as well. I mean, really, our catching tandem right now is really hitting very, very well. But I don't know how you get them both into the lineup at the same time and on a consistent basis. But, you know, if we were to see that kind of thing happen when Rosario comes back, I don't think that's a terrible thing. And if the Braves end up doing nothing at the trade deadline at all, that may be okay.
Well, I think that maybe fine. I think the comment from Alex that said the team's talent speaks for itself. Well, I'm sure it does. I just wish it would speak louder. If the team plays Eddie Rosario was a 30 home run guy. Okay. Now, how's he going to be? How well is he going to see after the surgery on his eye? The doc says he'll be fine. Yeah. Okay. He'll be fine. But you know, is that fine for a person or fine for a professional baseball player? And,
right.
You know, you're in that part of the area where there's not, with all so many teams fighting for a postseason place, you know, you're unlikely to get anybody to give anybody away, or might get be able to get Benintendi from Kansas City for nothing, who's hitting .337, but that's, you know, his peripherals don't really reflect that very much. And he can play left field and in a pinch center field, but again, not much power there, 15, 18 home runs. And again, his peripherals could all go away if he leaves Kansas City. So you don't know what you're doing. I mean, I just don't know. I would love to say, oh, go out and push this button and get this guy or that guy, but I just don't know who there is out there. And I've looked pretty hard. I just think that's it's ridiculous to expect it to happen 2 years from now.
Yeah, and I'm just glad we don't have 14 teams in the playoff picture, because talk about your sellers' markets. Oh my goodness, it's going to be bad enough with 12 teams going. So, are you watching the game right now?
I'm watching on game day. I don't have a video feed in here.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate, because I was trying to figure out what in the world just happened with Acuna. I guess they tried to double steal and he got thrown out of home.
I don't know. All I'm seeing is the game day, you know, the batters and all that. Swanson steals second, out at home, catcher Diaz to second baseman Brendan Rodgers back to Diaz. That's what it says in game day. That's what I see.
Yeah.
So, Riley walks, so I don't know.
Yeah, I could have had bases loaded, one out there. So that actually leads me into another thing. We've got Apple TV tonight. One Sunday recently, we had Peacock TV at a ridiculously early hour. What in the world is Major League Baseball doing with this streaming thing? I don't quite get it yet. They're trying to make everybody literally run all over their TV channels to try and figure out how to find a game these days, and it's getting a little annoying. In my book, and I don't know how if I'm going to get the game at all.
I'm going to give you the answer, and you're not going to like it. Yeah. MLB is making the money back it lost in 2020. When they went out to these streaming things, they said, well, MLB is going to set up its own streaming service. Here's the truth about the streaming service. No streaming service commitment, my $5 or $8 a month or whatever it is to a streaming service, or even $15 a month to a streaming service, is going to pay them the price they have to have for that game if they can't do a little ad pushing in there. And MLB launching its own streaming service knows, after MLB TV, that it can't make money with streaming just the games. There's no money into that streaming the games. So they're selling a few games here and a few games there to YouTube and Peacock and Apple TV and Lord knows what else, and the invention. And some of these guys are fringe players. Some of these streaming services are going to go away. I don't expect Peacock to hang on. NBC quit bidding on the thing when it found out they couldn't outbid Fox. And they're back into this because, hey, well, let's try to get this now. But I think they're going to fall off eventually. Anything MLB does, the first thing you ask them is, how much money is that making them? Right. And that's always the answer as to why they do things. Why don't they have a replay official to every ballpark? They'd have to hire 12 more umpires. It costs too much money to do that. Why are they spinning these off? Because it makes the money. Why are they going to play baseball in London? Because there's money in it. Why are they going to play baseball in Tokyo at some point? Because there's money in it. Everything MLB does is towards making money for MLB that they can hand out to the owners as their split percentage or whatever it is that MLB as an entity brings in, because all that money goes to MLB and then expenses are paid by MLB and then the rest of it goes back to the owners. That's where the owners make their money back. They don't make it directly from the team. They make it from MLB making money and giving it back to them. So That's why MLB does anything. It's follow the money.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you whatsoever, because that's obviously the motivation. And if you've got a baseball-only streaming service, you're not going to get many subscribers to that, not at the level of money that they really need to be able to make any coin at it, or to be able to handle their expenses. And, you know, certainly the going rates right now for all the other streaming services, $5 or $6 or $7 or $8 a month, except Netflix, is one of those deals where they can't charge more than $3 or $4 for the baseball. And they need more than that if they're going to be the host of it and set up the infrastructure to make that happen. So, yeah, I'm with you entirely that outsourcing is their only real option here. I just wish it were on a single source at least, so that we didn't have to worry about where to find a game on a given night. It also
Valley's going to stream. They have exclusive regional network rights for, I don't know, a dozen teams. And when they spin their streaming service up, according to what I read, they're going to stream all of those games. But I don't know how they're going to react to the blackout thing. Probably the blackout rule is going to apply, which is dumb way. But I did see that Bally is going to spin that up, and they're going to do it with the streaming services that they have. But you're right. Right now, there's no real way of going out and say, oh, I'm going to push this button and I'm going to watch the Braves game, because it's all a toss up. And that just proves what most people already know. MLB doesn't give a damn what we think as individual people out here, as long as we spend money, on it. And as long as the television networks spend money on it, that's why games start at 9 o'clock at night, in the postseason. That's exactly why it happens. It's money.
Yeah, and that's also exactly why I will not be doing the Bally streaming, because while I was rattling off, you know, $5, $6, $7, $8 streaming services per month, Bally's talking about something a lot higher than that, and frankly, that's going to be way too high. I already spend too much on my my cable, my internet, and the streaming services I've got. I don't care if Bally is trying to make back the money that they've been losing from having bought the regional networks. I'm not going to help them satisfy their debt that way. So they're going to have to come up with a different way or a different price structure. And I suspect that I'm not alone there. They're going to find out that soon, I imagine. But we'll see how that all comes down the pike in another few months here, I guess.
I think Apple will hang around, because they got the money to hang around.
Yes.
And when once all the dead wood's dropped off to the side, then Apple will get more expensive. But Apple can also afford to do it for the price of MLB TV. In other words, if you're taking Apple now and, you know, MLB TV, it's like $20 a month or something like that, $30, $25 a month. So if you're paying Apple $12 a month anyway, and they push it to $20, for that, then, and you want to watch a different game every week, you're going to be able to do that. But the individual game streaming, that's going to be on, and you're going to find that as you find it now on MLB TV and on Bally's stream, and wherever else you can dig around and find a hole.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice if Liberty Media could step in and bail out some of these guys with pennies on the dollar deal to save their necks or something, and that way we could have the Braves all the time.
Yeah, they tried to buy the networks when Bally bought them.
Right.
And they lost the bid for that, because they were then going to spin up individual networks for the Braves and the teams in the Southeast. They tried to buy the Southeast region, and they were going to spin up individual networks, like the YES Network and whatever that network is in Chicago.
SNY and such, yeah.
Yeah, and spin them up, and of course then the Braves would be part owner of the network, which would be make them let them pay the network the money, and then they get part of it back as owners, as well as the advertising income and all that. But Bally stepped in there and almost it's Sinclair. Sinclair's a cable guy. Bally is actually Sinclair Media.
Yes.
And Sinclair almost tripped over it when they bought that. 2020 about killed them, and they were still spewing money in 2021. And I don't know what they've got this year, but this is going to be the kind of thing that it's going to continually anger fans from now until I'm long gone out of here, and and there's no real way out of fixing it, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's, I still say Major League Baseball is the only major sports outfit that rations its product.
Yeah.
And it's not good for the fans, not good for anything. And that, between blackout rules that we've had for a couple of decades now and now this nonsense, it's just making it hard for people to consume the product. But that's the pet peeve I've had for years. So,
but the TV networks are paying $1 million. I mean, the last contract, that ESPN put out there was like twice the previous contract for fewer games. And,
yeah.
And then the whole point of expanding postseason, all that crap about it, making it more interesting for the local people. That's not true. The networks wanted more games. They wanted more postseason games. And so MLB is going to get money from ESPN. They're going to get money from TBS. They're going to get money from Fox. And they're going to get money here. And they're going to get money there from all these games that were going to spread out. That's why they wanted 14 teams,
yep.
16 teams. They didn't care much about the competition level. They don't care about the fans. All they care about is that the networks will pour money into them because the networks know that unscripted sports is cheaper to put on than scripted material, and that they save money by doing that. So everybody makes money but us.
So get all those channels on speed dial on your remotes and figure out how to get a hold of them, because you can just go between each one of them and try and figure out where the Braves are whenever they've got a game on, whether it's now postseason, if they get there, and all that. So anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here, Fred? My back's getting a little creaky in this rocker here.
Yeah, I understand. I don't. There's nothing really going on here that really I want to get into too much. I think that there's a couple of good stories down the road coming out. Right now, I think I'm not going to slap Jock Peterson, but I think I'm about done.
Well, that seemed like an interesting little fantasy league that they had going there. If Mike Trout's a commissioner and he's talking about himself getting booed for for doing whatever he's doing there, but I think a $10,000 buy-in to get in the league is a little stiff for me. So I'm going
to according to Brad Lidge and Spielberg and the guys, they run those leagues all the time, and that $10,000 buy-in isn't unusual at all. And
wow.
the payout at the end of the year is, oh, 10 times that maybe.
Yep. Well, they play in a league that I'm not familiar with.
me too. I don't play the game at all, and I can't afford to look at it, much less that $10,000.
Yeah. But it is funny seeing that pro athletes do this crossover and pay attention to, say, in this case, football, religiously enough to be able to keep up with that kind of stuff. I have enough trouble with baseball.
Lidge said they at draft season, all the team players come into the lounge wearing their uniforms of their football teams, and it's a big camaraderie build thing. And I'm just telling you that I can't afford that much camaraderie.
Yeah. Remember when they just used to play Fortnite or something?
Yeah. And hurt their thumbs, as I recall.
There you go. Well, I think that's going to do it for today. It's getting a little warm out here. I'm going to go inside and get some lemonade or something. But that's off Leo's rocker for this week. And we hope you guys can let us know how we're doing and keep reading the stuff that we do on TomahawkTake.com. We appreciate your efforts to look at our thoughts, and because we really appreciate the opportunity to write this stuff as well. But for now, Fred and I thank you for hearing out these two grumpy old men, and we'll see you next time. This has been another episode of Off Leo's Rocker, a podcast presentation from TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, as Minute Media is most obviously completely unaware of anything we're doing. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin McLeod entitled Batty McFadden, which was modified to fit in the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other musical selections used come via rights already purchased by TomahawkDick.com. Thanks for tuning into the podcast today. I'm just going to go now and start a pot of sweet tea as I try to figure out which channel the Braves are going to be on tonight. We'll see you next time.